This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Getting to the red line and playing it deep. Rene sweeps it around. Salamaki on this near side. He'll flip it through center. Bouncing puck in. Onto it. Arvidsson scores! Seventh heaven in Nashville. Victor Arvidsson with his first ever Stanley Cup playoff goal.
Back from 2016, that's Victor Arvidsson scoring for the Predators against the San Jose Sharks. Arvidsson, a key member, of course, of the Predators team going forward as they're going to do battle later on against the Arizona Coyotes. That is the 6-11 matchup in the Western Conference play-in round. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's check out the Odds Shark inbox presented by Odds Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddsshark.net. We were asking people for their the keys, the Jets. What did the Jets need to do to beat the Flames? We asked you to fill in the blanks. We have some comments coming in via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. River City Man says the Jets' decor has to step up. That'll be the key for the Jets to defeat the Calgary Flames. Greg Burnett says the Jets need Connor Hellebuck to be himself. If he is, the Jets will sweep the series. Woo. Greg is going with the bold prediction there if Connor Hellebuck is himself. So that is what the some of the comments coming in regarding what the Jets need to do to defeat the Calgary Flames. Got to mention also Dr. James B. 1960 on Twitter says the Jets' first line is better, much more mature and more playoff experience. Calgary has nothing on that line that matches Blake Wheeler's drive. The second lines are a saw-off depending on line A.
Is he a real doctor, though?
I don't know if he's a real doctor. Might just be a Twitter doctor. You might just take a look on it on Twitter.
There's a lot of Twitter doctors out there.
There's plenty of experts on Twitter.
I think if you put doctor in your handle, you're probably a doctor.
Well, I don't know. On Twitter, Dave?
I mean, I'm not going to take medical advice from you.
You could be a love doctor.
Yeah, I mean, you could be a PhD.
Could be. Yep. It could be, not a professor doctor.
Not an MD.
Not an MD, exactly.
Drew's bias is
no showing. Need to be denigrating any of our good friends who are PhDs, of course.
Dr. Yossel Manouk is listening. So
there you go. Well, he's a medical doctor, though. That's the difference.
He's got a few degrees behind his name.
There you go. That is the Odd Shark inbox. Facebook and Instagram posts, your text, your tweets. We find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed match-up picks. Find your edge, at oddshark.net. So we're talking about the Coyotes and the Predators.
Yep.
That is a series, of course, that's sort of flying under the radar a little bit.
With good reason.
Neither team has any offensive power to speak of. The Predators also don't have a full-time, pardon me, the Coyotes also don't have a full-time general manager right now.
Not that really matters.
Could the Coyotes sort of find that chaos and use it as a galvanizing force as they finally get back into the playoffs against the Predators? Or is the Predators' experience going to win out in this series against the Coyotes?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew, because we know the Coyotes haven't won a playoff series in how long? 7 years, 8 years, 9 years? I honestly can't remember. It's been a long time since the Coyotes have been successful in the playoffs, and they're obviously just trying to get there, right? So, you know, John Chayka, obviously we didn't see that coming. I mean, he just signed the extension, you know, how long ago, right? So we don't know how we can possibly quantify that in terms of the impact it'll have here in the play-in series, right? 8 years, Dave's telling me. 9 years since the Coyotes won a playoff series. So, you know, going back to what we were talking about, you know, with the Jets and Flames, and, you know, I made the argument there's more pressure on the Flames to win, and I think there's undoubtedly more pressure on the Coyotes, and that's saying a lot because...
On the Coyotes?
Absolutely.
Really? Why?
Well, did you acquire Taylor Hall just for a good time? I mean, when you go out and you acquire Taylor Hall, I mean, you're trying to make a run in the playoffs, not just make the playoffs, and, you know, Phil Kessel, I mean, you didn't acquire Phil Kessel... I mean, just for fun. I mean, you acquired Phil Kessel for his playoff experience, nearly a point-a-game player.
But if you're the Predators, okay, I'm going to push back a little bit.
There's pressure on the Predators.
I know.
I think there's more pressure on the Coyotes to get into the playoffs.
But if you're the Predators, and let's
Drew, if you lose and you acquire Taylor Hall and you gave up a first-round pick and you gave up prospects,
yeah.
you don't even get into the playoffs?
But if you're the Predators and you've acquired, think about your offseason, Matt Duchene... You've made the big trade with PK Subban to get him off your books so you can sign Duchene.
Sure.
If you're the Predators, and you don't go any further than this play-in round, aren't you basically saying that you're, isn't it sort of the writing on the wall for their core that it's not good enough, that they've already reached their peak, you know, a couple years ago, that at this point in time there needs to be a retooling in Nashville? Like, where is your next wave coming from if you flame out, pardon the pun, against the Coyotes right now?
I would say anything that has Roman Josi is probably not needing to retool too much. That's how dominant he can be as a player.
But to your point, Drew, I
would suggest that you guys are both saying the same thing. It's just in different ways. I think the reality is both teams are feeling pressure. I think that the Coyotes have the pressure, as Ezzy just illustrated, based on the fact that you made trades not just to make a trade, not to get fans in the seats, but to actually make some noise in the playoffs. Make the playoffs. You hadn't made the playoffs since 2011-12, I think. So you've got a team that, and then that was the year they went to the conference finals. But you haven't done that in how many years, right? So you're sitting there going, you need to do something. I mean, this is a fan base, again, that had that small window of success, and then it's dissipated. And for you know, more years than you can imagine since, basically since 2002, 2003, they've had three playoff seasons, three in Arizona. It's very difficult to solidify yourself without getting that fan base engaged in any fan base. I don't care where you are, any fan base engaged in the playoffs.
No,
so when you've had three in that many years, it's not a good thing. And so that's what I think Ezzy's saying, and I think it's a valid point. Well, to your point, Drew, though, I also agree with you, because I think if you look at the Predators, their window is diminishing. They've got some excellent assets. There's no question about it, but they're in a win-now mode. They're not win in 2 or 3 years down the line,
right?
Because they've got all this nice, they've got some nice young prospects, but I, again, at the same time, I just think that they're more of a win-now team.
And there's no right answer, obviously, right? I mean, like, when you're talking about who has more pressure, I mean, there's pressure on every single team, is there not? I mean, maybe the only team that doesn't have that much pressure is maybe, you know, the Montreal Canadiens or the Chicago Blackhawks, like the 23, 24 seeds, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, no, you're right, Drew. I mean, and Dave, like, when you're talking about the Predators, you're only a couple of years removed from your 117-point President's Trophy winning season.
Right.
It's not like that happened 6 years ago. So I don't think the Predators have enough to make a significant run. Like, for me, you see Saros or Pekka Rinne, even though we expect it to be Saros, you know, in game one, certainly. We don't know what happens, you know, with the rest of the series. But, I mean, Saros would have to basically steal one or two series, right? And to me, there's just so many question marks, guys, you know, when you talk about both teams, right? Like, we know that both of these teams are not offensive juggernauts, right? Like, these are two very, I would say, run-of-the-mill kind of average teams, right? Like, the Nashville Predators have reunited the Jofa line, right? Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson. That line was exceptional in 2018 when we saw the Jets defeat the Predators in that second-round series. But Duchesne and Johansson, your big guns up the middle at center, are both coming off of down years.
Yeah.
So there's questions about, you know, are they going to be able to turn it up in this best-of-five series? Dave mentions Roman Josi, arguably the best defenseman in the NHL, certainly top three defenseman. We talked about the question marks in goal. Looking at Arizona, we don't know if it's going to be Darcy Kemper or Antti Raanta. I mean, Kemper was basically on pace for a Vezina Trophy season before he went down with his injury. Antti Raanta is obviously, you know, a guy that also has a lot of experience. So we don't know if it's going to be Kemper or Raanta. I mean, the coaching matchup, you talk about John Hines. I mean, obviously it didn't end well in New Jersey. They started to play better, you know, towards the end of the season when it was put on pause there, you know, in mid-March. But, you know, a guy like Kyle Turris, you know, he was in the doghouse of Peter Laviolette. He's playing on the wing on that second line with Duchesne and Granlund. Like, Nashville, to me, has underachieved all year, and I think Arizona has also underachieved all year. So it's a very interesting series to me. Like, I think this is going to go to five games. I would be shocked if, you know, the series was a sweep either way. So, I mean, I'll give you my pick now. I'm going to take the Nashville Predators in five. I have absolutely no faith in that pick because I think this is going
to
be...
Take it to the bank, folks.
Well, I mean, there's just like... I mean, I like the Arizona Coyotes. Like, to me, Christian Dvorak is a very underrated player. And, you know, how many people know that Connor Garland led the Coyotes in scoring during the regular season? Like, not many, right?
I knew that.
So when you're talking about, you know, Nick Schmaltz, obviously, you know, hopefully he doesn't have any, you know, ill effects from that hit from Winnipeg's Ryan Reeves. You know, some people were calling for Ryan Reeves to maybe get one-game suspension, but, you know, Schmaltz is centering that second line with Phil Kessel, Soderberg. Another question mark. Kessel's coming off of a very weak regular season. Kessel's a guy that always steps it up in the playoffs. So for me, if the Coyotes are to win this series, I mean, guys like Phil Kessel, Taylor Hall, I mean, these guys are going to have a big impact on the score sheet.
Dave, your prediction? We have Ezzy saying the Predators in five.
I got the Predators in four.
There you go. So you have two predictions for the Predators. I believe the Predators will win, and if they do not win, David Poile, who's, of course, a very aggressive general manager, I think is going to look at his core group and say, they're not good enough anymore. I need to do something. And that's why I think the pressure is squarely on the shoulders of the Nashville Predators in that play-in round series. Quick update from Toronto. We know that the Rangers and the Hurricanes are first up today in this March Madness-esque play-in series and games all day long. Some goaltending information. People were wondering, is it going to be Shesterkin or is it going to be Lundqvist? It's going to be Lundqvist in net for the Rangers because Shesterkin is injured, quote, unfit to play, not believed to be related to COVID, but apparently he suffered some sort of injury either Wednesday against the Islanders in their exhibition game or Friday against in practice. That's according to Larry Brooks. So it's going to be Lundqvist.
And that's huge. Sorry to cut you off, Drew. I mean, Shesterkin was, 10-2 with a 930 save percentage. I mean, a lot of people thought Shesterkin was going to start game one.
Well, we saw
Folks in Winnipeg.
We saw Shesterkin play against the Jets here in Winnipeg, and he was unbelievable. And so that's big news for the Rangers Hurricane series. That's going to get underway, of course, coming up in about 15, 20 minutes' time. And later tonight, the main event, it ends the night. It's the nightcap, if you will, the Jets and the Calgary Flames. Game one, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
If you want to start with Quinn Hughes, Farhan uses the term dynamic. I'm going to say he got stronger, and he has taken another step. Now, he's got to prove that full-time at the NHL level, but he's been their best player in Canucks scrimmages.
That's TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger singing the virtues of Canucks defenseman Quinn Hughes. And, that Canucks team, and they're going to be battling the Minnesota Wild in the 7-10 matchup. We know that Canucks team is loaded with young talent. We saw a glimpse of it on Wednesday night in the exhibition game between the Jets and the Canucks. Quinn Hughes, he's a very dynamic player. Elias Pettersson, he's a dynamic player. Brock Besser, he's a quality player. And we know that Jacob Markstrom is their goaltender that's really been carrying that team through the entirety of the regular season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live on TSN Radio 1290. Later on tonight, the Jets and the Flames, the Western Conference's 8-9 matchup, a game you can hear live, of course, on this fine station. Still to come on the program in about 10 minutes' time, Eric Duhatchik of TheAthletic.com is going to join us to preview the Western Conference playoffs. This 7-10 matchup between the Wild and the Canucks, the Canucks to me are a team that is loaded with that young talent. That is a team that's got, speed, and it's got youth, and it's got energy.
Yep.
And the Minnesota Wild have been playing a lot better hockey under head coach Dean Evason after they made that coaching change. He went from interim head coach to full-time head coach, of course, during this pause in the season. It's sort of the youthful exuberance against the grizzled veterans of the Minnesota Wild. How do you see this 7-10 matchup playing out there, Ezzy?
We also have to give a shout-out to Flin Flon, obviously, Dean Evason from Flin Flon.
I don't, you do.
Yeah, and this is as close of a series as I think it gets. And, when you talk about the Vancouver Canucks and the Minnesota Wild, you think, okay, boring old Minnesota Wild. This is a much different Minnesota Wild team. We talked to a play-by-play broadcaster for Fox Sports North, the Wild broadcaster, Anthony LaPanta, last week, and the makeup of this team, he talked about how when David Evason took over from Bruce Boudreau, he was trying to get more offense from, the quote-unquote, bottom six, or certainly the third line, which is Alex Galchenyuk, Matt Zuccarello, and Marcus Foligno. Like, Zuccarello's a guy, you remember, was a first-line guy on the New York Rangers, right? And so the Minnesota Wild, Kevin Fiala obviously is a guy that, a lot of the focus has been on guys, with his offensive explosion after kind of, struggling to, reach his potential there in Nashville. But, there's a lot of depth on the Minnesota Wild. Now, for me, it's experience versus inexperience, right? Because, you mentioned 3 years in a row, right? Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, you've had Calder Trophy candidates, right? Like, the Vancouver Canucks, I think, have exceeded everyone's expectations. Like, nobody really thought the Vancouver Canucks were going to be this good. Now, I think this is a good first round, pardon me, qualifying round matchup for the Canucks. And, you know, the reason why I say that is because, you know, the Canucks are obviously going up against a good defensive team. I mean, there's no doubt that the Minnesota Wild are a good defensive team. And, you know, the Canucks have the luxury of Jacob Markstrom, you know, not having to have any doubts about whether or not he's going to be the number one goaltender, which you have with Devan Dubnyk and Alex Stalock. And to me, the thing that concerns me the most about the Minnesota Wild is, with all of that inexperience, are you going to be able to, with all of that, you know, changeover, are you going to be able to pick up where you left off? Like, to me, the Minnesota Wild were one of the teams where the break actually probably wasn't the best time. And I agree with that, you know, to a certain degree with the Winnipeg Jets, with how well they were playing. And we obviously have no idea, guys, with 4.5 months, if you can really put anything into the regular season. But, you know, I just look at that Canucks team and, you know, I love the top line. I love the acquisition of Tyler Toffoli. 6 goals in 10 games, I think, after he was acquired. I thought he fit in really nicely. And to me, guys, the biggest X factor, and I'm not the only one to mention this, I remember a year ago, a little bit over a year ago, prior to the draft, when the Canucks acquired JT Miller and they gave up that first round pick, we were saying, what are they thinking?
We criticized it on air.
Well, absolutely. And a lot of people did, Drew. And JT Miller, what does he do? He puts up a career-high 72 points, and yeah, he's been excellent there, you know, flanking Elias Pettersson on that second line with, I mentioned, you know, Toffoli. You know, that third line, we saw a glimpse of that against the Jets with Antoine Roussel picking up the goal. Adam Gaudette is an underrated player. Manitoba's Michael Ferland is the other guy on that third line. So, I mean, the Canucks have three really good lines. Obviously, you know, the fourth line with Beagle, Mott, and Sutter, that's a little bit of a mishmash there. But
worth pointing out, sorry, Yazzie, that Jake Virtanen, who, of course, Canucks fans have been lamenting that selection for a long time, isn't cracking their top 12.
Well, and that's something that I think is worth mentioning, because not only was he, what, a 6th overall pick, Dave? Was he the Ehlers draft? Was he 2014?
I think
Virtanen was, if I'm not mistaken, 6th overall back in 2014. But it's not just because of that. It's because Virtanen was a staple of your top 6. So that's a development that I think, you know, has really, you know, been something that hasn't been talked about enough. I mean, that's the equivalent of a guy like Jack Roslovic not being in your top 12, your top 13. So that is something that's interesting to bring up. But
especially because, you know, the sounds of it, if you listen to what Travis Green has to say, it's conditioning based.
Well, yeah, he said we want to have the team that gives us the best chance to win.
That's right. So they're not happy with how Virtanen showed up to camp, that they're not happy with the condition that he kept himself in during the pause, and as a result, he lost his roster spot.
Yeah,
I mean, and this is a guy who scored, what do you have, 18 goals this year for the Canucks? You know, for
18. He's 18 and 18.
There you go. A good season for Jake Virtanen. 18 goals, they're saying we're better off not having him in our lineup to start this play-in series against the Minnesota Wild, which is a pretty big black mark against Jake Virtanen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're never going to have if you're a guy who is seen as a go-to guy, and suddenly you're being left off and you don't think, the coach doesn't think that you can help his team win in a short series, it's a black mark. I mean, there's just no way of getting around it. I mean, and look, at the end of the day, you could be in a coach's doghouse. You know, we hear about Kyle Turris was in the doghouse, right?
Yeah.
But if you give that team a chance to win, you're not going to be out of the lineup. Because at the end of the day, ultimately, a coach wants to win. And so if the coach really feels that you're not giving his team a better chance for success, yeah, I mean, it's a terrible thing, and I believe he's a BC guy, so it's got to be a kind of an extra stab against him a little bit. But, you know, it'll be a real interesting series, I think, and I think Ezzie's right. I think it's going to be such a toss-up. I think either one of these teams, maybe you give the advantage to Vancouver because they've got Markstrom in net, and he's, you know, probably the better goaltender in terms of versus the uncertainty in Minnesota. But, you know, I read a lot of the different predictions and stuff, and one of the bold predictions that someone's made, you know, the article's 10 bold predictions for the plan, I think someone said that they expect Kevin Fiala to have the most points after all is said and done, I think, from the play-in round. So I think that was a pretty interesting call. So I think it'll be a very interesting series. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a terrible thing for Virtanen because I think that's a big loss for Vancouver.
You know what my sort of X factor to the series is? And you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290, doing our Western Conference playoff preview. It's Ryan Suter, and it's sort of weird to describe Ryan Suter as an X factor, but you remember,
he's got tons of experience.
But you remember that he wasn't in the lineup for the Wild when they lost in 5 to the Jets.
That's
a couple years
point.
Ago.
Yep.
Obviously, the Wild didn't make the playoffs last year.
Parise was injured too, wasn't he?
I believe he was injured as well. Yes, they lost. Remember, they lost Suter very late in the regular season.
Yeah, it was
that
like
year.
Game 78
or 79. So this is a guy, Ryan Suter, who's got tons of talent still.
Yep.
Tons of pride. Hasn't played in the playoffs in a number of years. I think he's looking at this as an opportunity when he wasn't certain that there'd be another opportunity readily available to him and his Minnesota Wild teammates. So I expect Ryan Suter to be an absolute beast on the ice, especially, you know, Ryan Suter going up against the challenge of Elias Pettersson, going up against the challenge of a Brock Besser. I think Suter's looking forward to that opportunity, yep. And I think he's going to be a huge factor in this series for the Minnesota Wild.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll give our predictions here in a second, but, you know, for me, like, you know, Dave just, you know, was echoing what I said, but really, like, even though you give the Canucks the advantage because they have, quote-unquote, more of the young, you know, talent there with, you know, Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and Quinn Hughes on the back end. But, you know, when the Minnesota Wild can, you know, put out, you know, when they can put out, you know, Eric Staal and they can put out Joel Eriksson Ek and Alex Galchenyuk up the middle, and, you know, Kevin Fiala, we talked about his breakout season, but, you know, you've got Matt Zuccarello on the third line, as I was talking about before. I mean, there's a lot of depth there, and you mentioned Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon. We've talked about him so many times, such an underrated defenseman. He's been a staple there. Brodin and Dumba, like, your top four on the Wild are really good. There's a reason why the Wild make the playoffs almost every year, right? And obviously, you know, when you get down to the third pair, Carson Soucy, Brad Hunt, I mean, Brad Hunt got absolutely posterized if you saw Nathan MacKinnon's goal, you know, in the exhibition.
Nathan MacKinnon
against,
posterizes everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point, Drew. But so, I mean, even though the Canucks, I think I'm taking the Canucks in this series, and I think they're going to win in five games. I don't think this is going to be an easy series. I think there's going to be some overtime games in the series. I think it's going to be a really good one.
So as he has the Canucks in five, Dave Minuk?
I'm going with the Wild in five.
Dave has the Wild in five. I'm leaning towards Dave a little bit, and I do think that Ryan Suter factor is going to be a big one. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Eric DeHatchik. I had the opportunity to sit down with him yesterday to talk about the Western Conference playoffs. We'll play that interview for you. We'll look at the East coming up in the final hour, and of course, much more on the Jets and the Flames as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Pleased to be joined now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by my good friend Eric DeHatchik of TheAthletic.com. Obviously, Eric joins us all the time whenever we do our playoff preview shows, whenever we do our regular season preview shows. Eric, a season like no other, certainly given the global pandemic. But, it is Saturday morning and the puck will draw on the return protocol later on this afternoon. You know, obviously, as a hockey fan, you're looking forward to seeing real hockey back on the ice. But, you know, given that it's the 1st of August, it really is just so bizarre. And that's almost like the underlying feeling that I have, just how bizarre this entire scenario is going to be.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. And I'm pretty sure that no matter what level of the game you're consuming this product at, whether you're people like us in the media, whether you're the coaches, whether you're the players, or whether you're the fans that are sort of starved for hockey content, I think the uniqueness of it is what everyone talks about. What every team in the play-in round has played an exhibition game. Every coach and a handful of players have done an availability afterwards. And I mean, you know, they're reading from the same playbook, right? I mean, you know, no one knows what lies ahead. No one knows what a hiatus is going to mean. No one knows what will happen if there's a positive COVID test or several. It's just this great uncertainty. And, you know, and I've always said that, you know, the NHL playoffs are like a great reality show at the best of times anyway. And this year, with all of the added wrinkle of a worldwide pandemic, it just feels like, you know, trying to make forecasts, trying to, you know, be analytical about these various series. I mean, you may as well just, you know, throw a dart against the wall and see what happens. It's just really, you know, hard to know. You could make a case for every team, but I'm going to make a case for the best teams because I think the best teams have the best players, and the best players are all going to be rested. And I think that is the fundamental difference this time around. Normally, when you get to April, a lot of heavy mileage on the Draisaitls and McDavids and McKinnons and Marchands and players like that. And all of these players who are, you know, running on a quarter of a tank usually what at the start of the playoffs have had their tanks refilled. And I think that will be the most important wrinkle of this year's playoffs as opposed to other years.
Eric Dehatchik of TheAthletic.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the playoffs, doing a preview of the series, which, of course, get underway later on this afternoon. Eric, the series, of course, that is of most concern to people here in Winnipeg, and it features a team, you know, you're based part of the time out of Calgary. The Jets and the Flames series, for most observers, is a fairly close series, a bit of a toss-up. You know, from your perspective, if Connor Hellebuck is the Connor Hellebuck that you know he has been all regular season, does that shift the ledger in favor of the Jets enough to give them the edge in the series?
I definitely think he's the X factor in the series, because you know the one thing about the Flames goaltending this year is that it's been good. I mean, it's been good. I don't think that you can be more strong than that, but I don't think you could be more critical either. And especially in the sort of the latter half of the season, you know, at that point, I think Cam Talbot kind of inched a little bit ahead of David Riddick in terms of results and performance. And so what I'm going to say is I think the coaching staff has confidence that both guys can get the job done. But the decision in Calgary in terms of assessing where to start in goal and then how it's going to unfold is way different than in Winnipeg, where Hellebuck has had this incredible season. And you know, even in the game against Vancouver the other day, I thought when the Jets were kind of so-so in the first period, Hellebuck was great. And so it didn't look as if he'd missed a step. And, because of his strong play in the opening period, I think the Jets were able to reverse the momentum and get it going. And you know, won kind of handily at the end of the day. So, yes, I completely agree with you. I think that, you know, if you go through, you know, sort of defense and forwards, I think there's the slight edge maybe in Calgary on defense. It would be a greater edge if Travis Hamonic was here, but he's opted out because of family reasons. So that closes the gap a little bit, especially on the right side. And then up front, I mean, you know, the Jets have, I think, 5-star forwards, but the Flames are pretty good too. They have 4 guys that they rely on very heavily and a 5th guy that you might not normally put in the conversation. Michael Backlund was just on fire the final month of the season. He was one of the top 10 NHL scorers and he was playing the best hockey of his career for Calgary. So it's pretty close on paper, and you know, I guess we'll see where it goes.
Absolutely, it is very close on paper. You know, from my perspective, you know, looking at that Flames team, and we know goaltending has sort of got the bulk of the focus. Matthew Tkachuk is the X factor. You know, obviously a fantastically skilled player, fantastically skilled at getting underneath the skin of his opponent. If you're the Winnipeg Jets, how do you neutralize as best as possible Matthew Tkachuk?
Well, I think the best thing to do is not engage with Matthew Tkachuk, because you're right. I mean, the one thing I would say about the Flames is that, so we're going into a playoffs without fans. And so I think, where does the energy come from? Well, the energy is going to have to come more from within than usual. So a lot of times you're the home team in a playoff, or really even if you're the visiting team in the playoffs, you gain energy from the crowd, right? In Winnipeg, the whiteout, you know, in Calgary, all those red jerseys, you know, it just gives you a leg up when energy starts to lag. So that won't be the case. So I think players like Matthew Tkachuk that are vocal, that bring a team into the fight, are way more critical than they are normally. And the Flames, for the most part, are a pretty quiet bunch. And they are not, you know, all that demonstrative. I honestly think that's why Zach Rinaldo is even in the picture, because he's someone else that creates energy, and you may need that in a quiet building. So again, if you're Winnipeg, you know, the last thing you want to do is get Tkachuk involved in the fight. If you can just sort of ignore him and skate away and not let him raise the temperature of a game, I think that benefits you if you're Winnipeg.
Moving north of Calgary to where all the games are going to be played, the hub city of Edmonton, the Oilers have the 5-12 matchup against the Chicago Blackhawks. And I look at these two teams and, you know, they have outstanding offensive talent, top-end talent. We know the Oilers, McDavid and Draisaitl. We know the Blackhawks were led by Patrick Kane. question marks on the back end, maybe, you know, some question marks in goal. But to me, the big edge for the Oilers comes behind the bench with Dave Tippett. You know, do you agree with that assessment, I guess, is the first question. And then secondly, how big of an advantage do you think Dave Tippett will bring to the Oilers dressing room as opposed to maybe Jeremy Colton in the Blackhawks room, a guy who hasn't been through the wars of the playoffs that Tippett has been?
Well, I do think that that Dave Tippett is an important factor in the series, because he is a protege of Dave King's. And if you go back and look at what those Phoenix teams that were kind of under-talented that he had accomplished, you know, occasionally in the playoffs, I think he's a tactical genius. And the one thing that I've been impressed with in terms of the way he's coached this Edmonton team is because a lot of people characterized him as a defensive coach and said, hey, what would be the impact of his coaching style on the offensive performances of Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid? Well, I think we got our answer. I mean, Leon Draisaitl won the scoring title. You know, Connor McDavid would have been right there if he hadn't missed those half a dozen games. And more importantly, I mean, when you look at the ice time that forwards averaged in the NHL, Draisaitl and McDavid were 1-2. So there was no difficulty in Dave Tippett getting those guys the ice time that they needed. In fact, even in that exhibition game that they played against Calgary, you know, you saw him, you know, do the little things that we saw him do a lot in the season. You know, he gets down to the last, you know, 90 seconds of a period. All of a sudden, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid are playing on different lines, and now they're out there together with Kyler Yamamoto. So he... I mean, every coach likes that tactic occasionally, but I think that you're going to see a lot of it from Dave Tippett. And again, it goes back to a point I made earlier in our conversation, that because those top players are rested, you are going to be able to load them up with minutes right from the get-go and not worry about what the long-term implications are. So, you know, every team is going into this tournament thinking, okay, we're one of 24, but why can't we win? You know, I mean, that's how you have to think. And if you are trying to think big picture thoughts about, you know, like what's it going to look like 9 weeks down the road? Well, usually in the Stanley Cup final, guys are just running on fumes, especially the guys that eat those big minutes. I don't think that's as much of a factor this time because, you know, all of a sudden they're ready to go. So I think tactically you're going to see coaches having more options this time around than in a usual playoff because of this freshness factor. And that particularly favors someone like Dave Tippett, who is, you know, creative in terms of the way he deploys people and gets the matchups that he wants. He's, you know, I want a guy like Dave Tippett behind my bench if I'm trying to win a Stanley Cup with that group for sure.
Eric DeHatchick of TheAthletic.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Later tonight, the Jets and the Calgary Flames. Game one of the Return to Play series, a game, of course, you can hear live on this fine radio station. You know, Eric, I look at the round robin and the four teams involved in the round robin from the Western Conference. You have, of course, the Golden Knights from the Pacific and then the three Central Division teams and the Blues, the Avs, and the Stars. How much does that top four seeding really matter? They're sort of – these teams, from my perspective, are sort of in a strange scenario where – you know, if you're the fourth place team, you know, do you have that much of an advantage or a disadvantage as compared to the team that's number two or number one in the next round?
It doesn't feel like it to me. I mean, every coach or every manager would tell you that, you know, you'd ideally like to get that top seed. Why? Because when you get to the round of 16, you're playing a best of seven, and if you happen to get to a seventh game, you want the designation as the home team that comes from having the higher seed, because you may be trying for a hard matchup this time around, and that gives you the opportunity to get that. So, but that is so far down the road, and I'm not sure that they're necessarily, you know, as concerned with that as they are of you know, getting their game up to speed, getting their special teams looking good, but mostly surviving, you know, these preliminary games with their lineups intact. I think that's the biggest issue. I mean, it's impossible to predict injury, and in this particular year, I guess impossible to predict, you know, the consequences of illness too. But I think that the focus is going to be on just surviving that opening round. I put it this way: if you're a team that goes 1-2 or 0-3 in that round, but gets through with all of the top players. That's way better than winning the thing and losing the guy out of your top six or a top four defenseman. And so, it's a fine line to navigate, and you really can't protect against injury. You can't not play hard, but I think that those games will have a little bit more of an exhibition feel than these best of fives where everything's on the line from the minute they drop the puck in the first game.
Does that put those teams at a disadvantage entering the best of seven round? Because maybe they're not at the same intensity level that the teams are that participated in the return to play? Or does that quickly dissipate and then everybody's back on an even playing field pretty quickly?
Yeah, well, that would be my answer, that yes, in the first 5 minutes of the first game, probably if you're a team that has managed to survive the opening round and you're feeling pretty good about yourself because those are so precarious, and you're facing a team that might have played at 7/8 time in the round robin seeding round, I do think that for a very short period of time in the very first game you might have an advantage. But I think that those teams in the seeding round will be building through that seeding round. So maybe, by game three, you see the pace and the energy ratcheted up a little bit, and with the idea that, you're ready to go when it starts to matter. And, you have a little bit of an extra cushion in a best of seven. But again, I think that that's a trade-off that most teams are prepared to take. Like if to go as hard as these teams in the preliminary round are going to have to go in that seeding round and then possibly have to deal with the consequence of an injury, that probably doesn't seem like a trade-off that most teams are prepared to make.
Eric Tkachuk of TheAthletic.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Flames later on tonight, they get underway in the return to play series. Eric, obviously, the Arizona Coyotes are in the playoffs, which is good for them. It's been a long time. They're not entering with the best of vibes around the organization with the contentious departure of John Chayka, general manager John Chayka, earlier in the week. Could this be maybe a bonding moment for the team in the dressing room, saying, they can use it to maybe galvanize against the Predators ahead of what most people think is a fairly even series between the two teams?
Yeah, no, that's been sort of my take on it as well when I've been asked about it previously, simply because that's the history of Arizona, right? When during that period of time when all of the issues were percolating around the team relating to ownership, that they were in bankruptcy for a while, they were owned by the NHL for a while. And again, Dave Tippett was the coach during most of those years, and he used that absolutely as a rallying cry. Was like, it was that whole us against the world thing. And you think, okay, these are professional athletes. How can that work? That's fine if you're 10 years old, right? Or 12 or 14. But no, believe it or not, it still works even at the professional level. No one respects us. No one expects much from us. Let's prove to them that we can put these things aside. It's going to be this group in this bubble that are going to go out on the ice and prove that we're pretty darn good. And they have some decent pieces in Arizona. Darcy Kuemper is, so much good hockey over the last 3 years, kind of flying under the radar. If you look at their 1-6 defense, pretty good 1-6. And then, Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel, I think, in different ways have something to prove in this postseason. Kessel was supposed to come in and be a bit of a difference maker on a team that last year was very competitive, just couldn't seem to find that extra goal that they needed to win some games. And he was just, he really didn't do what I think they hoped that he would do. So he has a chance for a little bit of redemption. The same thing, Taylor Hall, a good year, but not an MVP year, And so again, if he's hitting, unrestricted free agency, there does seem to be a signal from the ownership that they want him to stay. He's got something on the line too, prove to people that, that you are an elite player. And so if these players can raise the level of their game, if the goaltending can be as good as it has been for a long time there, I mean, they're dangerous. You could say that of almost every team, but they have good pieces. What I did at the start of this entire process, I stared hard at those lineups because sometimes, again, you forget a little bit. And I'm looking and I'm going through that, and I said, this is a pretty good team, better than I thought. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they could win a round, even though I do think that they, you know, on paper and the betting lines, I think they're the underdogs. I think they have the chance if they hear the right motivational message and if they come to the party with the right attitude to you know, attract some attention.
The final Western Conference playoff series, Eric, is, of course, the Minnesota Wild and the Vancouver Canucks. You know, two teams that I just don't think that many people are giving either team a chance to move on. They sort of seem to be not a battle of the also-rans, because that's a little bit too harsh, but just two teams that are sort of just happy to be in the playoffs is the perspective I'm getting. Obviously, the players would never admit that, and the players would never feel that. But when you look at the Canucks and you look at the Wild, do you see either team there really being have a possibility of going on a run in these interesting Stanley Cup playoffs?
To me, it's an interesting matchup just because of the relative developmental arc of these teams. I think Vancouver is a team that's putting some really nice young pieces in place and has a chance to be really good really soon. You know, Pettersson up front, obviously Hughes on defense. You know, most of the reports out of the Vancouver camp say that, you know, as good as Hughes was, you know, the 4.5 months, he's bigger and stronger, he's faster, he's like a year two player, not a year one player. And Pettersson is just so much fun to watch, so skilled. You know, he's going to be a difference maker and a top 10 player in the league very soon. So, you know, and generally with those young teams, you just don't know where that next step is going to come. I'm not sure that it's necessarily going to be this year, but I think it's coming soon. You know, Minnesota, on the other hand, is a veteran team. And again, a lot of those veteran players like the Stahls and the Zach Parises that have a lot of playoff miles on the chassis, they're going to be healthy. And I'm not sure what they're going to look like if they're playing 7 weeks from now or 9 weeks from now. Probably they're not. But for sure, in these early rounds, those players are going to be very sharp. And I think you cannot underestimate the value of their experience in a series like this. You know, Ryan Suter is another player I would put in that category. You know, Vancouver's goaltending is far more settled than Minnesota's, but Alex Stalock at different times was pretty good for them. So to me, I don't have a sense of this series. Like I can absolutely see it go either way. In my mind, it's kind of a coin flip. If you had a monkey with a wheel, I would trust the Maggie as much as I would my prediction or maybe even yours. But again, it's, you know, those compare and contrast kind of styles of series are always interesting, you know, on an intellectual basis as much as anything else. So, yeah, I'll be watching to see how that goes, but I don't have a strong feeling either way.
Last question for you, Eric, and this would be typically where I'd ask you for your Stanley Cup finalists or your Stanley Cup winner. And if you want to give those, by all means, I'm not going to stop you. But I wanted to sort of, you know, I wanted to flip it on its side a little bit. You know, East or West, doesn't matter. Is there one team that you think maybe isn't getting the respect that it deserves, that isn't getting talked about as one of the elite teams entering this this you know, unique playoff scenario? You know, somebody that's maybe flying under the radar that they really shouldn't be?
Well, I mean, it's a great question because I flip-flopped on this. And one of the things I would tell you is that I realized that, you know, like sometimes you have an idea about something and then, you know, you watch a bunch of games. It's like, I was wrong about that. And, you know, I'll give you a good example. My first thought was, why is Calgary playing Edmonton in an exhibition game? I said, that's just crazy. What if somebody gets hurt? What if it didn't make any sense? And then I watched the game. And I thought, you know what? This was the best possible matchup because they were in the game right away. And I thought of all the games I saw, that was the best one. Why? Because both teams were really engaged. You could tell that, you know, there was still some spillover from that, the regular season hatred that came up. So it was like, I guess I was wrong about that. So I'm prepared to be wrong about a lot of things. And so I would tell you about a week ago, I'm looking at Florida's roster and I'm thinking, Jesus, Sergei Bobrovsky can be Sergei Bobrovsky, the guy that upset Tampa in four straight, the guy that's won two Vezina trophies. Florida's got all the other pieces and a very experienced, savvy coach. And then I watched them, you know, lose 5-0 to Tampa, and it's like, okay, probably you shouldn't read too much into it, but I'm not sure that I want to, you know, be touting Florida as my dark horse anymore. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you Toronto.
And you're going to make friends.
Well, no, but it's crazy to think that, okay, so how can Toronto fly under the radar? But I think a lot of people believe that's a pick 'em series because, you know, Columbus, A, you know, beat a really good Tampa team last year in four straight with a smothering defensive plan. And Toronto has a lot of the same elements as Tampa did. You know, Toronto has had a recent history of playoff disappointments with that young group that they've got. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, they're a team that looks good on paper, that sometimes is less than the sum of their parts, but they are a good team on paper, and those young players are starting to mature. And so if this is the time where it just sort of galvanizes and comes together, I mean, I don't love the coaching matchup there on the Toronto side, just because I think John Tortorella is such a great tactician and has just won before and probably will win Coach of the Year this year. But, you know, sometimes it comes down to, you know, the players on the ice, and Toronto has a lot of really good players on the ice. And I don't know, you know, I mean, they're going to have to find a way to, you know, to win those tight games and maybe find a goal from unexpected sources. I think they've got the, you know, the depth up front now to do that. So yeah, my new dark horse, if you could call Toronto a dark horse, is going to be the Leafs, and let's see what happens.
Well, the excitement gets underway a couple hours from now. I think everybody's champing at the bit to finally see some meaningful hockey after the appetizer of the exhibition earlier this week. Eric Dehatchik works for TheAthletic.com. He is one of the incomparable hockey writers we have in this fair country. Eric, thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate your time. I'll let you get back to your quality time with your family. Be well, my friend.
All right, thank you.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Big thank you to Eric Dehatchik for sitting down with me yesterday to record that interview. You, of course, know Eric from all his great work at TheAthletic.com. We really don't have any preview show without talking to Eric, so it was a great opportunity to chat with him yesterday. It's also rare where we get an opportunity to give a live score update of a playoff game while we're on the air. They're underway in Toronto between the Hurricanes and the Rangers. Carolina scores 61 seconds into the game. Jacob Slavin scores from a beautiful pass from a Sebastian Aho. The Hurricanes lead the Rangers 1-0 midway through the first period. Of course, later tonight, the first game underway, the nightcap will be the Jets and the Flames, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Just want to quickly mention, Drew, we were just talking to Stephen Wino about this about an hour ago. You know, Jacob Slavin, you know, Stephen Wino was mentioning is going to be a factor in the series, and he, of course, gets the goal. And Brady Shea, I mentioned him when we were talking about, you know, the defenseman the Hurricanes acquired, Sammy Vatanen being the other one, and Brady Shea had that huge hit prior to Slavin's goal. So, obviously, Carolina's defenseman having a huge impact here early on.
Absolutely. So the Hurricanes lead 1-0. The Rangers are on the power play, pushing to look for the equalizer midway through the first period. When we come back, we're going to look at the other Eastern Conference playoff series. Much more to come. You're listening to the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm really glad we're getting a chance to come back and play. I feel like I've got, you know, more to offer, and it's a good chance for me to show it, and I feel pretty comfortable right now with my game, all things considered. So it'll be a bit of a bizarre one to jump right into playoffs after so much time off, but it's a good opportunity to kind of make up for a bit of an up and down season for sure.
A bit of an up and down season, probably a lot of an understatement as it pertains to Tyson Barrie, Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman. Welcome back to the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show. The Leafs and the Blue Jackets are another of the Eastern Conference first round series. Are you guys okay, Ezzy and Dave? You had 23 minutes to get all your energy out, and somehow the two of you managed to not do anything anywhere. Why are you sitting on the couch?
Well, I mean, I wanted to sit on the couch over here because I don't have a view of the TV the way I'm facing. I'm away from the TV, so I wanted to come sit on the couch, and Dave made it so awkward for me to sit down.
You know what? The two of you, I need hazard pay having to work with you guys. But in any event, that was Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman Tyson Barrie. And Barrie is one of those players that the Maple Leafs are going to need a lot out of. You know, he's a veteran guy on their blue line. He certainly has not lived up to expectations since coming over from the Colorado Avalanche in the offseason as part of the Nazem Kadri and Alex Kerfoot trade. So if the Maple Leafs expect to get by the Columbus Blue Jackets, they need to have all of their cylinders clicking. And that's not something you can say that the Leafs have had a lot of this season. That, to me, is a fascinating first-round matchup. John Tortorella, I also believe, has to be sort of licking his chops going up against a rookie head coach in Sheldon Keefe. A good head coach, but John Tortorella is such a master tactician that, and what they did last year to the Tampa Bay Lightning, boy, that is a fascinating first-round 8-9 series in the Eastern Conference to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about that break back in mid-March and which teams it benefited, I mean, Columbus has to be at the top of that list, right? I mean, Dave was asking Steven Waino about Seth Jones, who I think is, if not the best defenseman, certainly a top-three defenseman in the entire league. And, you know, Seth Jones wouldn't have been healthy back in, you know, April when the playoffs would have started, right? So, I mean, it's a closer matchup than some people think, but I do think I like Toronto in this series. And even though when you look at Toronto and some of their, you know, first-round failures against the Boston Bruins, I do think that this year is going to be a little bit different. I don't think Columbus is going to be an easy out, boys. But, you know, Freddie Anderson had a very underrated regular season. You know, obviously, you know, Austin Matthews has a lot to prove. We know that, you know, he went through COVID-19, so that might be a little bit of a factor. But, I mean, in that exhibition game against the Montreal Canadiens, guys, Austin Matthews was absolutely flying out there. So when you talk about, you know, the impact of COVID-19, I don't think it's going to be huge. Certainly won't be, you know, as the play-in series progresses and if the Leafs go farther. But you're right, Drew. I mean, John Tortorella always has the Columbus Blue Jackets ready to go, and they're a difficult team to play against. And, you know, even though they don't, like, to me, this is offense versus defense. The Columbus Blue Jackets, I think, were third or fourth worst in the NHL when it came to goals for. So obviously, you know, the Blue Jackets don't have the Matthews, the Marners, you know, the Tavareses. They don't have those types of game breakers. So to me, I mean, if it's, you know, Jonas Korpisalo or if it's Elvis Merzlikins, they're probably going to have to steal a couple games in the series because Toronto, as we know, is one of the best offensive teams in the league. They have a deadly power play. So, you know, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for Columbus to duplicate what they did last year.
Prediction?
I'm going to go Leafs in four.
Leafs in four. So, not, you know, obviously not a sweep, but also not a ton of trouble for the Leafs in your prediction there, Ezra. Dave Minuk?
Well, I think the Blue Jackets caught a lot of teams, you know, unaware with what they were able to do last year. And I think Tezzy's point, I think, you know, John Tortorella, you can love him or hate him, and Ezzy has more reasons to hate him than love him than most people. I think the reality is he's still a good coach and he's still a guy who has his team pretty prepared. And, you know, he lays it on the line. Like, he's, you know, he was complaining about the way they were practicing during, I don't know if it was during training camp or already when they were in Toronto, but the reality is he's a pretty honest guy. And I think, you know, he's going to have his team prepared. And I think, you know, we talked, I don't remember when we were doing the interview. It was, I think it was last year. We were talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets, like, parade of good goaltending. And that goes all the way from, you know, to Cleveland and their AHL team to their prospects that are, you know, drafted but not necessarily playing
pro yet.
This
is when they still had Bobrovsky.
Yeah, this is when they still had Bobrovsky. And we're just talking about how in that regard, they're lucky in the sense that they have guys who can step up and be that guy for them. But I think that the Leafs know, you know, as Steven said to us when we had him on last hour, I think Leafs know the importance of, I think everybody within the organization knows, but especially the players are just aware of how much pressure. I mean, we always know it's the center of the hockey universe, mm-hmm. and the reality is there's always going to be pressure on them. But as Steven indicated, and as I would agree with, you know, this is a year that you don't know what next year's going to look like, and you're not going to be able to, based on the salary cap, have a lot of flexibility. So I think they understand that, listen, we need to start making some noise. And look, you know what? People can slag on the Leafs all they want. They lost to some pretty good Boston teams in those first rounds. It's not like they lost to teams they should have beaten easily. But having said that, this is a year, I think, that many expect the Leafs to make that jump. And I think if you don't have that success, there's going to be, to your point, Drew, similar to what you said with Nashville, you could see some big changes. Now, overall, I actually think the Leafs are going to get it done this year. I think they will do it. I think they'll actually do it in five.
Leafs in five is what you have, as he has Leafs in four. Moving to the Pittsburgh-Montreal series, that's the 5-12 matchup in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, to me, are a team that isn't getting talked about enough. They're healthy now. They have Evgeny Malkin. They have Jake Guentzel, and they have some guy, oh, named Sidney Crosby. Their big question, of course, is in goaltending, where you're not sure if it's going to be Tristan Jarry, who was an all-star, or if it's going to be Matt Murray, who did have his struggles this season. And you're going up against the Montreal Canadiens team that has Carey Price, and that they have that they have a good line, that good first line, but then there's a bit of a drop-off after that. To me, though, I don't believe that the Montreal Canadiens have what it takes to defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins, even in a short five-game series, Ezzy.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. And if there's a big mismatch when it comes to these qualifying round previews, it would be this one. As you mentioned, Drew, there's just not enough depth on that Montreal Canadiens team. And, you know, you go back and, you know, the Canadiens were one of those teams, along with the Blackhawks, you know, that unloaded prior to the trade deadline. I mean, wouldn't you love to have Ilya Kovalchuk in your lineup if you're Montreal, right?
Sure, and, he's in Washington now.
Absolutely. Tatar, Deneau, Gallagher, you know, the analytics say that is one of the best first lines in the NHL. Maybe not necessarily offensively, but when it comes to possession and, you know, it's a speedy line that generates a lot of chances. But, you know, there's Nick Suzuki there centering that second line with Yoel Armia and Jonathan Drouin, and there is a significant drop-off, as you mentioned. And yes, Barry Kotkaniemi is on that third line with, I like Arturi Lehkonen a lot, actually, Paul Byron, very speedy player. So I don't think the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to necessarily sweep this series, boys. But, I mean, you talk about the Penguins and all of the injuries, guys, right? Like, you talk about the Crosby sports hernia surgery, right? Like, you talk about the injury to Jake Guentzel, right? Like, these were significant injuries, and the Penguins didn't miss a beat. And that's why many people believe that Sullivan should have been one of the three Jack Adams finalists. And, you know, when you talk about Tristan Jarry and Matt Murray, I'm kind of leaning towards, you know, Sullivan going with Matt Murray because of the experience. But Tristan Jarry definitely deserves, you know, that first start. He certainly deserves at least one start in the play-in series, right? And it's going to be interesting because Matt Murray, of the free agent status, it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening there. But
just announced 9 minutes ago, Matt Murray going to get the start for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Look, I look really smart, right, Drew? So
I mean, I just saw it on Twitter.
For once in my life, I make a right prediction. But, I mean, Matt Murray has the two cups, guys. Mm-hmm. He has all the experience. But, you know, something to watch in this series. I mean, you're right. I think, you know, not enough people are talking about Pittsburgh because they seem like that one team that should be in the top four in the Eastern Conference. It doesn't feel like Pittsburgh should have to play in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you talk about, you know, it's not just, you know, the injured players that are healthy now. Jason Zucker obviously acquired from the Minnesota Wild. Patrick Marleau is on the Penguins' third line there with Jared McCann and Patrick Hornquist. That's a darn good third line, guys, and I just think they're going to be too much for Montreal to handle defensively. Yes, Carey Price, he's going to make some saves. You know, can he get a shutout? Can he steal a game or two? Of course he can. He's one of the best goalies of all time. I just think overall this is a bad mismatch for Montreal. I think Pittsburgh's hungry. I think Sidney Crosby is not happy, especially with the way they were dispatched in the first round last year. Neither is Sullivan or any of the Pittsburgh Penguins, including Geno Malkin. So I do think that Pittsburgh is hungry. I think they're maybe being disrespected a little bit by some of the, you know, people that are, you know, picking them, you know, not to necessarily go far in the playoffs. So I like Pittsburgh. I'm going to go Penguins in four.
Dave Minuk?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we've heard so much about Carey Price stealing this series, and obviously that's a real concern because it's a short series, and if a goaltender gets red hot, and he was one of the best goaltenders, you know, in the NHL for so long, it's always entirely possible that a goaltender could do something. And again, of all years to say anything could happen, it's this year, right? You've got teams that are healthy. But speaking of healthy teams, I mean, this is a Penguins team that was able to do so much with so many injured stars. Not just injured players, because I believe the Blue Jackets were tops in the NHL for injured players,
man games lost.
That would go to them. But, I mean, and you know, Paul Maurice talked about it when they were talking about who should have been the Coach of the Year finalist. And he said, how does Sullivan and Pittsburgh get left out based on everything he was able to do with a lineup that was as injured as it was? So I think Pittsburgh is a team that, you know, I mean, look, the reality is guys, you know, will constantly say, oh, I don't listen to this, I don't listen to that. But, you know, they listen and, you know, they hear that stuff.
Yeah.
So I would think that Pittsburgh can use that as not necessarily bulletin board material, but as incentive to say, listen, like, you know, we're, you know, we've got some of the best players in the game on this team. We've got good depth and we'll look what we were able to do when injured. So I would think that Pittsburgh is going to be a hungry team. And I think, you know, what we've been talking about, Montreal, you kind of got the impression they weren't necessarily even wanting to play in this series. So, again, if Montreal was somehow able to win it, it'd be largely based on, in my mind, Carey Price.
Yeah, and I know we got to go to break here, but like, even though, you know, you have Max Domi, for example, who obviously, you know, missed some of training camp, mm-hmm. Dave, and he's, you know, they've had him on the fourth line. Obviously, you know, you expect him to be in the top six, but even though Montreal has got some interesting, you know, depth at forward, and they've obviously got, you know, a good group of defensemen. I think Jeff Petrie is underrated on that second pair with Victor Mete, and then obviously, you know, former Jet Ben Sherrod has fit in really nicely with Shea Weber.
Yeah, they said he's been the best defenseman in Montreal.
They just give up too many shots. I mean, the Habs are right up there when you're talking about, you know, the amount of shots that they give up. They just, I think, depend too much on Carey Price. You know, there's just a lot of inexperience there. So I just think, again, it's a bad matchup, and that's why I think Pittsburgh should win the series. But who knows what happens if Price is able to steal a game or two.
Yeah, I mean, if you want my prediction, because yes. I didn't get a chance to make it, I would say it's going to be Pens in four.
There you go. So Dave has Pens in four, as he has the Pens in four as well. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk about our Stanley Cup finalists. We'll talk about our Eastern Conference finalists. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm excited to go to Edmonton. I hope I get to stay for a very, very long time. It's like this enormous summer camp. Maybe. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to leaving. I've been home for 3.5 flights. It's like 4 times in my career. My wife has packed for me. Today was one of them.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice excited to be at summer camp in Edmonton. Probably the first time anyone's ever said they're excited to be in Edmonton. I kid.
Whoa, Drew, not cool.
No, that's cool. I kid. Yeah, I'm sure in Edmonton somebody's saying the same thing about Winnipeg. It's okay. I say it with love in my heart. There's no malice. I only have malice for you. You know that.
There should be like a Jets reality show out right now. Like, what are the Jets coaching staff and players doing in these like 9 to 10 hours like leading up to the game? Like, how many games of Fortnite is Lion A playing right now? Like, is Paul Maurice reading a book? You know, what is Charlie Huddy doing? Is he just having a nap? Like, how many of these, I want to know how many of these guys are having naps, because I bet they're so excited that it's hard to nap on a day like this.
I'm just glad you're not a TV producer, because that sounds like the worst show I've ever heard of in my life. So don't listen to Ezzy yet again is the lesson in today's.
If there can be a show on TV called My 600-Pound Life, there, I mean,
that's your story. Anyways, welcome back to the show. One final segment Saturday morning. The Jets and the Flames later tonight, 9:30 p.m. puck drop. You can hear it live.
Are you going to be able to stay up for that there?
It's going to be tough.
Old man,
I got to tell you, it's not going to be necessarily be that easy, but I've been practicing.
Vancouver game was not just an exhibition game for you. It was obviously
that's
the
right,
Jets.
It was practice. It was a little regular season to make sure I'm in playoff mode.
But it's also so weird, right? Because they have the 9:30 game today, then they play 1:30
on Monday,
and then Tuesday's 5:45.
That's right.
It's just bizarre.
Can we just have a consistent game time? Like, these games are all over the place.
I don't like the 9:30 starts 3 in a row. That would be too much for old man Mandela.
Well, it's also interesting because they'd be playing on the same ice kind of surface, right? Like, at the last game of the and Josh Morrissey was talking about the ice and how good it's been the last you know, he said it was actually better than he expected.
Sure.
And he also expects it to be better once it's worked in a little bit. So we'll see how that goes.
We'll see if the puck is bouncing around, after 4 games on the ice later on tonight.
But this Rangers-Carolina game in Toronto looks like, so far, in the first period's done, and it looks like the ice is pretty good. So
I would hope so. It's the first game that's been played in that arena in about 4 months, so I would hope they'd be able to make the ice surface half decent there in Toronto.
But also, good to remind folks, in about an hour, Jets are going to have Their morning skate?
Yes, their morning/afternoon skate, and all that. All the information from that skate will be available on illegalcurve.com.
That's what I was getting at.
I know that's exactly where you were going. I do want to mention that this final segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Stay tuned to our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Going to be an interesting contest we're running with our friends at Rumors. It's called the Illegal Curve Game Winning Goal Contest. So stay tuned to our Twitter feed for more information about that as we get closer to puck drop tonight at 9:30, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. I never did ask you guys your predictions for the Jets and the Flames. So without further ado, if you don't mind.
I think we did give predictions, but if we didn't, I think I might have said Jets in four, but I'm going with Jets in four.
Thank you. Say it again in case
I want to see, Jets in four. I wanted to maybe, you know, go with five games here, but, you know, I do like the way the Jets were playing, even though, you know, the break was so long ago, 4.5 months ago, almost 5 months, right, guys? You know, I liked what I saw in that exhibition game, even though you don't want to take too much out of it. I just think, you know, the Jets have the obviously ace in the hole there with Connor Hellebuyck, but more so, I just think that, you know, offensively, you know, the Jets have an edge over the Calgary Flames. I think the Flames, you know, are coming into this play-in series maybe with more question marks, definitely more question marks, actually, in my opinion. So, you know, I do like the Jets. I think it's a favorable matchup. I think the Jets' speed is going to be really tough for the Flames to handle, and I do think there's going to be a lot of pressure on that backline line if the top line of Gaudreau, Monahan, and Lindholm isn't firing.
Dave, your prediction.
Yeah, I'm going with the Jets in four as well. I think that I think Tazzy's point, he just illustrated it really well, but I think ultimately this difference is going to come down to number 37 for the Winnipeg Jets. I think Connor Hellebuyck showed mid-season form, you know, playoff form, whatever you want to call it, on Wednesday night against the Canucks, and I think, you know, he's just locked in, and he's, you know, this kid is just entering his peak, and we've seen what he's able to do, and obviously, like any other goalie, he's got idiosyncrasies, but at the end of the day, like, I think he'll always be that X factor. He'll be the heart nominee for the Winnipeg Jets.
I realize we didn't get an opportunity to go deep into the Panthers-Islanders series. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably deliberate on our part.
I have predictions if you want.
Sure, go ahead. Why not?
I like the Hurricanes in four.
But I actually the Panthers and the...
Well, we didn't do the Hurricanes-Rangers series yet. Prediction.
Oh, right. We just said their score. You're right.
Right. So I'm going to, and obviously now that they're up 1-0,
well,
I mean,
over.
My prediction is looking great. But no, I like the Hurricanes, even though the Rangers are an underdog, but it seems like everybody's picking the Rangers. Maybe, you know, a lot to do with Artemi Panarin's season. But I like the Hurricanes. I think even without Dougie Hamilton and Brett Pesce, they're really deep on defense. I don't have as many question marks about the goaltending as some people do. So I like them. And I'm going to go with the Panthers in five. I think the Panthers-Islanders series is going to be very closely contested. But I do like, you know, Bobrovsky and the Panthers in that one.
That's it for the Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests. We are joined by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, and Eric Dehatchik of TheAthletic.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on IllegalCurve.com. It's available on TSN1290.ca. It's everywhere you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor back at the station doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.